Happy Monday. Happy Monday, Anthony. Happy Monday. Happy Monday. Monday.
I always find it quite funny how what people's introductions are on their Instagram stories. And a lot of people do say happy whatever day it is, don't they?
Happy
Like,
Monday. Monday.
happy Tuesday. Like, when would you ever say that in normal life? When would you go, so happy Tuesday? How are you?
There was a meme or a little video. It was ages ago now, and it was like some Australians like greeting people as you would greet people and talk to people through social media. It's fucking brilliant. It's amazing. We're gonna do that actually. But yeah, happy Monday.
The amount of different intros I've had on stories over the years. Yes, now. Yes, people. Hey up. What's happening, people? It's fucking bad cringing it, thinking back at it. Normally, I don't get bothered by things like that, but that in how funny was it used to be when we used to do loads of recording? It was always the intros and the endings that used to
Yeah.
fuck us up, wasn't it?
That one time in, I think it was the last,
In
maybe.
Leeds, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there was one.
That's the ending bit is the most annoying bit because you've done all of the stuff that you need to do, and then you're like,
Right.
bye
Right.
guys, what? I've just turned into a CBBC fucking child presenter at the end. Bye guys, what are you doing? Oh no,
Yeah.
every time, man, fuck's sake, anyway. Come on, what we got? I can't decide whether it's easy to read them off the Excel document or the actual forms itself. But I'm going with the forms again today. So the first question from what I see is deep one. Is a deep one? Is that the first question that you see?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, who's going first with this one?
You can, because you like to talk, don't you? What is? I knew you wanted to answer it because you
No,
usually.
I didn't.
I'll ask
No,
the first question.
because I've only just seen it now, and then I'm like, "Shit, what can I say to that?"
What is one thing you guys have learned that you wish you knew earlier?
But at the start of this, he's put regarding life in general, so it's not necessarily business, is it?
All
Or
right.
coaching.
Well, the other one, well, there's two really, isn't there? What you guys have learned from being a young coach in the industry? Reassurance that my intentions will allow me to be a successful coach.
Okay, so I'll answer that one first. I've already answered that one, but let me check in. But so honestly, the biggest lesson I've learned as a coach is that everything is, it's really shit advice this, but everything is just a process. So I'm naturally, as a person, very much focused on results. And yeah, I'm a results kind of driven person. That's just in my personality. I'm competitive. And I think as I was going through my career, even though I probably hid it quite well, the self-limiting beliefs and self-doubt that I had was based off, it was either viewing things off of like a pass or fail mentality. And I think a lot of the time that stopped me from probably having more confidence in my ability, my knowledge, my business, myself as a person. Sometimes I probably held back because of it. And let's say if something didn't go so well, it had hit you probably twice as hard as if something went really well and you kind of were buzzing from it. So I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned as a coach and running a coaching business is that most things are a process, and the more open-minded you can be, and the more of a growth mindset that you can have, the better you will push through things, and the more manageable then bouts of self-limiting beliefs and self-doubt are. So yeah, that'd be my, I suppose, the biggest lesson that I'd have as a coach. What about you?
I think very, very similar, but a bit of a different kind of twist is that at the times where I felt a little bit powerless to change in, whether it be clients or helping clients progress, or as well as helping my business progress, that there's always something you can do. Like, and it comes off the back of what you said then, like lots and lots of self-limiting beliefs and narratives that protect you from rejection and getting things wrong and feeling stupid and silly and whatnot, is that there's always things that you can control and to focus on the controllables, which is a very cliche thing to say, but usually cliches are true, aren't they? So, I think that's a big, big, big lesson that I learned. Is, and I think the realization of the fact that there is always going to be, listen, we always come, we all come into industry because we want to enjoy what we do on a daily basis. I think that's a given for any PT coach, right? But there's always going to be an acceptance that we're going to have to do things that we don't enjoy doing, that don't fit into that bracket of enjoyment. And usually those are the things that are going to keep you in business, to be honest.
Yeah, and with that, I think where most coaches go wrong is that they don't embrace that them things they don't like to do. They kind of resist against it as if either A, they shouldn't need to do it, or B, they find it too hard, so tell themselves it's too hard, so avoid it. And I think that stops a lot of you, and did me in the past, from then being able to take action on those things. Because I think the way it's painted sometimes is that it's just this coaching is one thing, running a coaching business is a separate thing, in my opinion, like a lot of the time. Like it's viewing it in two different ways. And I think a lot of people come into the industry and thinking, right, I'm a coach, but not thinking that you're running a coaching business. And there's some of them bits in there that we don't enjoy and we don't like, but like you've just said, that we have to do. And the ones that do well are the ones that push through on them things and kind of make them their own. Yeah, so I think that's important. And what I said before about kind of viewing it all as a process and not a pass and fail mentality. What I mean by that is that if you're putting yourself out there sometimes and it's not something that you're naturally confident to do, if that doesn't go well, you automatically, that level of self-talk, automatically you tell yourself you're not great at this, or I've tried that, I'm not doing it again. And for me, that was something that I battled with at the start. It's just I was stubborn enough to kind of fucking work through them. Yeah, and I just see that a hell of a lot with some PTs. It's like you really beat yourself up if something fails in your mentality. It's a lot of the time it's your expectations. So it's yes, setting goals, yes, setting targets, yes, setting aims. And being accountable to yourself 1,000,000%. But also, it's removing any level of expectation on that and just seeing it as a process. And that's really important. Right. The second question actually is separate. Regarding life in general, what is the one thing that you've learned that you wish you knew earlier?
I think that things can change quicker than you would ever expect them to. I think I was very impatient, very impatient. When I want something, I want it tomorrow. And I think when you're in a stuck in a position, and if you kind of look at my first 10 years of my career, that it was quite stop start, i.e. a lot of traveling, next place, next thing, next thing, next thing, and I just wanted everything now. And I think that sometimes that patience will allow you to enjoy the process a little bit versus looking at the next thing or the next place or the next whatever. So I think I wish I knew that things can change for the better very, very, very quickly. Like, especially when you're in sticky situations, you feel like this is, if a day, a week, a month feels like forever. and things can change so quickly. And I think reminding yourself of that can help you stay focused on the important stuff. Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Do you know when I seen that question? There's so much, isn't there? Like you look and there's so much that you could say to that. Like, and it's hard not to sometimes relate it to your job because that takes up such a big portion of your life. Do you know what I mean? And there is, and I think some of my biggest and best life lessons have come from my the clients that I've had since being a coach. It really has. Like, honestly, this kind of blends into the answer that I just said before, but I was very results driven and I probably still am now. Jesus Christ, you should have seen me at the side of the pitch at the fucking 7-year-old's football games today. I'm very results driven, especially when there's a cup up for a cup to win. But yeah, and I think with that, what I realized that I was constantly chasing more hours, more work, more success. Because I'm quite traditional in my values, me, like from back in the day. It was like I learned a lot from my granddad who worked a hell of a lot. So then my nana didn't have to work loads, but she could spend lots of time with family and the kids and looking after the house and the so I was kind of brought up on them saying kind of morals and values of graft my ass off, provide your family as much as you possibly can. Cater for you, like support your family and your missus and all of that. And then as a byproduct from that is the you'll live well and the kids are well looked after because mum's looked after them and all of that. I very much had them values up until probably my late 20s, early 30s. And with that comes a lot of pressure. And some of the life lessons that I got from my clients were because my clients were a lot of them were blokes who were very successful in their jobs. So they either owned or they were CEOs or the directors or the heads of their businesses or whatever it is. And honestly, the lessons that they provided me in regards to reframing how I viewed success was massive because their biggest regrets was missing out on most of their kids' upbringing through doing the same and having the same values and all of that type of stuff. And as a byproduct of that, they were always used to, like, there's three or four of them used to say the same thing. I really regret not seeing them grow up. Some of my kids struggle now because of it. I would like to think if I was more around and not just focused on growing the business and all of that type of stuff, then the kids would have had a bit more of a support network and all of that type of stuff. So I seen that in three or four of my clients, and that really changed the way I viewed and framed success and what I wanted moving forward in my 30s and so on. So I'd say that was definitely the biggest life lesson I've got. So it's mad actually. You can get a lot from your clients in that way, can't you? Some deep ones to start with. Bloody hell. Bloody hell. Next question. Where are they? Client wants to go down a package. My prices have changed since she signed up, so she was questioning the new price she was on. She had the old prices written down. How can I address this with her?
I think very simply explain to her how your business has changed, the service has changed, the outcomes have changed. And that is the correct price point that every other client is paying now. And that you gave her, a goodwill gesture in keeping her at those price points up until this point now. So I think you've just got to be open and honest with her. There's no hack or trick to it. If she values it, she will pay it. And I think treat it as another, like when you're taking a client through the next stage of their journey, whether that's going up a level of service or down a level service or going from face to face to online or whatever it is, that should come off the back of another needs analysis, another alignment with their goals moving forward. So they should understand what each element and feature of the service brings directly to them. So I would say those things I would start with in regards to, has there been a process of needs analysis and matching that service to a needs, wants, goals, desires, current situation, and then being transparent in why it's changed. versus where she started when she started with you. So yeah, I would just be complete transparency. Yeah. Any different?
No. I'll ask this question to you again because I think it's off the back of one of your emails. Genuine question, and please don't take it the wrong way. A while back, there was an email about being a PT back in the year 2000.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, back then, there weren't any social media like today. But PT still ran their business. The early noughties, noughties, it doesn't sound right now, does it? Looked like a wicked time to be alive. I was only 3 years old, so I wouldn't know. Wow. What was it like being a PT, especially on a cruise ship back in the day? I found this very inspiring. Bless her.
The social side I wouldn't go into because it was a bit mental in a good way. It the cruise ships was like a baptism of fire. It was like you literally you go down to London to train, and training is like every day, like 8 to 8, learning how to teach yoga and Pilates and step and aerobics and do assessments and like loads of different things. Like you're running basically a gym, the full class timetable, all the PT stuff, all the consultations, all the tours, either by yourself or with another coach. So and you can go at any point. And I think I got 2 weeks in, and you literally get a kind of a call up saying, right, your ship's ready, your flight's tomorrow. But my flight was in the evening, so I got the call, got on a plane to Barcelona, arrived at this cruise ship, and never saw been near a cruise ship in my life. Shit myself, because like standing outside this cruise ship, not knowing where to go. And the manager of the spa and gym came down, was like, right, you're on at 6 a.m. And so you literally you got get a tie, you turn up, and you get on with it. So it learned. I would had a very good, hardworking work ethic, similar to what Anne was mentioning there from my old man, from my parents. And you just learn quick. You either don't learn and don't embrace it, or you literally go home. They send you home because you don't earn money and you don't make money. So that taught me just to get on with things and be proactive and kind of take things as they come. And it taught me very quickly how to build very quick relationships and rapport with people, because you had people on the ship for 7 days and you had to sell to them personal training packages, class packages, products, etc. So it taught me to sell really quick. And yeah, it was just a great experience to kind of put under your belt, really. And plus side is you earn a decent wage and saw the world, yeah. So it was very hard, but very rewarding. Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
What, just let's extend on that a minute. She mentioned about something, having no social media and stuff like that, and obviously I can contribute a little bit to this, but how then, apart from the obvious of speaking to people on the gym floor and doing gym floor lead gen, how else? So if there's people listening to this and going, right, but PT's built a business with no social media back in the day, apart from the old gym floor lead gen and stuff. How else, if PDT was sat here now thinking, fuck, I'd love to not just have to rely on social media, how else would you recommend an online coach, for example, to build a business without that, if they could?
It's the same thing, like in so it was basically like in the terms today, lead magnets, like tons of them. Like we used to have an embarkation day, so we used to do tours, but the tours were like events. Do you know what I mean? They were like your energy was dialed up to a million because you were working with predominantly Americans who were very enthusiastic, so you had to match that energy, and you had to engage them really quick. And it's exactly the same. Like, we talk about surveys a lot, about people putting up their hand to understand what they want. When you were touring people around, it was constant questions and engaging in that way, and go, right, oh, yeah, great. You don't want to put on. There was always a thing where you used to. There used to be a kind of running theme of, and like, fear of people putting on 2 pounds a day on a cruise ship because the food is so vast. So that was like a bit of a pain point we knew about. And you used to have two ends of the spectrum. You used to have very fit individuals coming on, and you used to have people who, for the first time ever, have got time where they can go to the gym and, get involved with it because it's on their doorstep, and they've got, we're at sea, there's nothing to do apart from drink, eat, swim, or spar and train, really. That's it. And so it's very similar. You used to put on tours. We used to go down and do like demos in the little shopping area where we used to take like these body composition analysis machines down. So there's a lead magnet. We used to do seminars and webinars, because we used to have, there was like an internal TV, so you used to come and film them. And there were catchy stuff like lead magnets, like I always mention it, eat more to weight less, detox weight loss, like really clickbaity type of titles, and market it and create awareness on the tours, flyer, go on the crew TV, sorry, the ship TV, go in the shopping area. So it was all lead magnets. All of them were lead magnets. And then you used to sell off the back of it, like BCAs, personal training, packages to go home with. So the process is exactly the same. Exactly the same, yeah. Okay. I offer a small group coaching, not just training service, that is as much, if not more, focused on what happens outside the gym. Other small group PT in the area is just training focused. This makes me appear pricey in comparison. I'm tempted to call this out, not calling out other specific businesses, but how the training will only get you so far and probably not where you want to be, especially for the women I want to work with. Thoughts, and how aggressive would you go?
I think 100%. Like, if you were to look at from a marketing strategy perspective, you've got to look at what, how can I get certain misconceptions across of what I do? How can I overcome certain objections in what I do? How can I play a bit of a hero versus villain at points? So them content clusters that we talk about quite often, you could quite easily put this across. And I would, there's a couple of ways of looking at this. So yes, 1,000,000%. And in terms of how aggressive you'd want to be, depends on your values, I suppose, depends on what you stand for. I would be quite happily okay highlighting it. Like, you'll probably see me very much highlight across stories quite often about how many group calls that we have a week, because I know there isn't another mentorship out there that has that many touch points with the people within their mentorship, or they don't have the touch points with the main people they buy it off. So I'll happily fucking put that on my stories proudly every week, and I enjoy doing it. So it depends very much how aggressive you want to come across. It's entirely up to you on that. But I would 1,000,000% definitely outline it. And I would put it in a pillar probably every single week where I can put that in front of people in a different way. And another way of doing it is making sure that looking inside the business currently, and if there is any clients, I think making your clients aware, because I remember doing posts once about like, training itself isn't gonna solve your problem, right? Going to the gym X 4 or 5 times a week isn't like, it's a small percentage of the solution. And I remember clients coming to me and was going, "What do you mean?" Like, pulling me on it, and I was like, "Fuck." Obviously, your clients need to understand that and be educated in and around it first. So all I would say is that work with your clients in showing that too. So if you could, let's say, for example, we're going into February and we're putting a huge emphasis on step on nutrition accountability. So let's say my internal client engagement strategy for February is very much based around how they stick to their calories, or they stick to whatever their nutrition targets are. And we're really going to push that. And as a byproduct of it, I can share it as social proof and then anchor off the back of this message that I'm trying to create. So if your clients can see that, feel it, especially if they've been to another gym where they've just trained, they can tell that story in the way that they're kind of tagging in and reviewing your content, reviewing you on Google and all of that type of stuff. So people will get an insight of that through your clients. So I think that's huge. But the other insight, like I said at the start, in my opinion, you should definitely be putting that across within your content across various different pillars, to be fair, like the misconception one, the barriers one, the hero versus villain one. Like that stuff really helps you to stay on track of what to share and how to share it. So it triggers people to understand, this is not just me turning up to a training session, it's this holistic service, should I say, that is being delivered, which is better than, say, I don't know, the CrossFit gym down the road or the small group training gym that I'm just attending the training session for. So yeah, that would be my response. Nick?
I've already fed back. So it's...
Okay. Is mine better than yours?
There's probably a lot of useless information in there getting to the point, but yeah, it's all right.
Dickhead. I've got a consultation next week with someone who fits my demographic, but I think my new price might be an issue for them. I've had a few leavers this month, so I could really do with the sign up. Should I stand my ground and charge the new rate, or do I present a slightly lower price to ensure the sale?
The first question is, how do you know it's going to be an issue for them? That's the first thing. And they might have said, might mention it, right? But I'm thinking that might be in your head, maybe. If they haven't mentioned it already, challenge yourself on it. You put your price point at that point for a reason. So it's a difficult one to kind of answer, because my initial reaction is you raise your prices for a reason. So why are you taking them back down again? It's not less valuable. But then on the other side of my brain, it's kind of going, well, in reality, if you're really struggling at the moment, then you've got to do what you've got to do to make ends meet. But with decreasing the price comes less perceived value from that client, probably means less value on the service you're delivering, which means blah blah blah. So I would ask myself those two questions, first of all, and based on the answers of those, like if you're in danger of hitting below the bread line or very close to it, then you've got to do what you've got to do. But what makes you think that it's an issue for them to begin with? That's my first point, and probably the biggest point out of that. Anything else, Anthony Park? I want to post in the JD Gym freelance PT page, but I'm struggling with what to write. I need to introduce myself, as the members of this page are members of the gym I work in. Do I mention that I'm looking for either male or female who's available, preferably during the days Monday to Friday, looking for long-term weight loss, or I did just post in to introduce about me? If you guys were in my position, how would you go about posting in this page?
If I was you in that position, my first post would be just who I am, what I stand for, and why I do the job that I do. That's it. Because from that, people will connect and gravitate towards the why, and the stuff that you stand for. So I would have no expectations on that post, because you're not going to get anything from it apart from a bit of awareness. So yeah, when you have no expectations, these less, not as bothered when you put it out. So yeah, who you are, what you stand for, why you do what you do. And then I would build on that the more you start to understand who you want to work with. Because if that's the case, the more you understand who you want to work with, the more specific your posts can be. So when you are putting in there, you're putting quality in instead of quantity. Do you know what I mean? So I think that would be the best place to start. What about you, Nick?
100%. I would put about, I wasn't listening, but I would also put about your why. You said about
You disrespectful little prick, you know
that. I'm trying to multitask.
that. You can't, you're a bloke.
No, that's very true. Yeah. Did you say that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well done, Anthony.
Here's the next question. You ready? Do you ever have weeks where you struggle with enthusiasm too?
Oh, yes.
Every week, and fucking hell.
Yeah, loads, yeah, all the time. Yeah, I do. I think it's natural. Your motivation is gonna peak and trough all the time. And I think that's, first of all, you've got to accept that. Secondly, you've got to be okay with it a little bit as well. Like, you're not going to be enthusiastic every single day about anything, are you? Like, you're always going to have dips. I think when the enthusiasm dips become more and more and more, and they start to take over the days where you're passionate, enthusiastic, I think you've got to really address it. But I think it's also about taking a step back and kind of looking at the bigger picture, looking at why you're doing things, and also looking at it as a bit of a challenge and an experiment. And I know that's hard because, that's not to say use your business as an experiment, because that's how you make your living. But I think reframing things that you don't like to do, like whether it's the classic kind of social media, or it's getting up in front of people or whatever, as a learning experience and a challenge, I think just helps to reframe it for versus I have to do this. So yeah, 100%, we all get like that. And the only thing that pops into my head really is about making sure you're getting a good ratio of rest versus work. I think that's massive, massive. Making sure you get a rest, yeah. Apart from that, no, anything you don't answer me?
No.
You sure about
Yeah, next question. Come on. Next question, actually. We're going to take this question onto the live on Instagram because I think it's a good question to tackle on there. Hurry up!
Shut your Mancunian trap. I'm trying to find it. Who's it? Oh, no.
Shite you.
When do you know if you are or aren't working enough on your business?
When you ask that question, you'll know 9 times out of 10 that there's potentially more that you could be doing. Yeah, if that's the case, this is literally from fucking experience. If you're asking yourself that question, normally that means that there is this lingering part of you that thinks, shit, could I be doing more? And if so, what? And if them thoughts are entering your head, for me, one of the biggest things that you need to do is sit down and get specific on what it is that you want and need from your business and focus on the main kind of goals and targets. And that might not be, I'm not talking about sales, lead generation, and all of that type of stuff, because you're questioning, can you do more? So then what we need to do is go, right, well, what is it that I want to do and need to do? If we look at We talk about having four pillars to your business. So sales and marketing, sorry, finance. So the revenue your business is coming in, marketing, your client engagement, and all of that type of stuff, and then your service and product. So if you've got them four pillars and going, right, what falls into them? So my revenue and my marketing links, right? So where does my marketing go in my week, and what are my tasks that need to be done in there? My client engagement, I'm thinking of that collectively as a group and individually as each person. So whether that's stuff that I'm doing for my group, education, lives, when doing client meetup events and stuff like that, or I'm doing weekly check-ins, messages to clients, calls with clients, sessions with clients, all of that. Any service and product developments and so on, right? So service and product developments might be your onboarding and all of that. Now, there is tons to do in your business, right? But it has to be specific to you, and the purpose and meaning that you have behind it is massive, because then you've got internal motivation to go, right, these are the things that I want and need to focus on. So a lot of the time, it then boils down to focus and prioritizing that work. And then only you will know, because it's from your goals, from your plan, from what you want to focus on, if you are doing enough on it. Okay. And I get it, because I've been there. But now this point, I'll get to a Friday afternoon now, and I'm thinking, fuck, I can't do anymore. So there's an element of being, like you just mentioned, the work to rest ratio, but it's going, how clear are you on your focuses and when, how, and what it is that you're doing in them? Because the clearer you are, the less you'll ask yourself that question. I guarantee it. So it's getting clear on what them focuses are. Because I can't sit here and tell you if you're doing enough or not. I can have my opinion on it, but you've got to set that kind of boundary for yourself and understanding for yourself. Anything you'd add to that, Nick?
No.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I'd add. I think the only other thing that I would add is that link it all back to data. So, if we look at finance, is your revenue going up in the direction that it needs to be? Is your leads going up in the direction they need to be from a marketing perspective? Is your client feedback moving in the direction that you want it to be in terms of client engagement and the client experience and the results that they're getting and all of that? And then is the development in your service moving in the direction? And if any of them are a bit not too sure and all of that, it's a sign that potentially you're not doing enough and you need to address it. But I'd go off the data as much as the plan. The end. Should we take that question onto the live? What do you reckon? Good one to ask, or what? Good one
Yeah,
to address.
why not?
Come on then. What's your final thoughts for today?
Toxic.
What?
Toxic.
Wow, what's all of it?
It.
Yeah, her.
She's got a phantom pregnancy again.
You know, what's all of her? She's right, drama queen, ain't she? Attention seeking little fucker.
No, she just slept for 2 days.
No, but why do they have phantom pregnancies? Educate me.
Hormones.
No.
Blue. Blue. Blue.
It's just a great end to the podcast, by the way.
Blue. Right, see you later.
Do it.